Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to the Dom Harvey podcast, brought to you by Radix Nutrition and the Generate KiwiSaver scheme. Coming up, Kings.
So for me, all I could do was punch walls and like exert anger. It's not that I was necessarily angry, it was just frustration of being able to say like,
I didn't get that. Could you try again?
Shut up, sir.
Or, still angry.
Yeah. Exactly.
If you Google Kings, you can find out his song Don't Worry About It was number one on the New Zealand charts for 33 weeks, making it a record. An absolutely incredible feat. For perspective, the previous best was Lords Royals, which was number one for 16 weeks. But this conversation isn't about that. It's jam-packed with stuff you won't find anywhere else. His journey of raising a daughter after he became a teenage dad, the impact of therapy to deal with his anger issues as a kid, his complicated relationship with food, which resulted in him getting a gastric sleeve operation, coping with sudden fame, regrets about doing an Air New Zealand safety video, going on The Traitors reality TV show, finding religion, and much, much more. I loved getting to know Kings better, and I'm sure you guys will as well. Just before we crack into it, quick word about our sponsors who are making these conversations possible. Radix Nutrition, first of all, and Generate KiwiSaver Scheme. Radix Nutrition have just made an incredible leap forward with the release of their V9, version 9 meal range. These freeze-dried, just-add-water meals stack up nutritionally and taste amazing. You won't believe the vast range of flavours either. If you're really busy or just too lazy to cook, but still want to eat well, you have to give these a go. Check them out, radixnutrition.co.nz. Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X. This episode is also brought to you by the Generate KiwiSaver Scheme. Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of chart-topping long-term performance. I recently moved my KiwiSaver account to Generate after meeting one of their friendly advisors. The meeting was really helpful. I learned stuff about KiwiSaver that I'd never really considered before, and the bottom line is this. If I'd done it sooner, my KiwiSaver savings would probably be worth more than they are now. If you want to make sure you're making the most of your KiwiSaver account, talk to a Generate advisor now. Head to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/get advice. A copy of their product disclosure statement can be found there too. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited, and of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns. All right, let's get into it. Kings on the Dom Harvey podcast.
Yeah, man, nice crib.
Thank you so much. Thank you so. I really appreciate you being on my podcast. There'll be a lot of people that aren't familiar with the name, but I reckon there wouldn't be anybody listening to this or watching this that doesn't know your song.
Right.
The way podcasts work and with Spotify and stuff, I can't play any of the song here.
Yeah, that's right. You don't need a flag.
So if only the singer-songwriter was in the room right now. Yeah, so your song, Don't Worry About It, the most successful single in New Zealand history, number one for 33 weeks.
Mm.
That's the one that goes... run free, boy, run free.
That's what I would have said to the young me. Yeah, man.
And it just, it's got that sound. It starts, ooh, ah. And you just feel good when you hear it.
Yeah, man. I felt good when I made it.
2016, that Don't Worry About It came out.
Yeah.
And from like an outsider's perspective, it felt like you were just this thing that came from out of nowhere. But as I've discovered with this podcast, doing this almost 2 years, speaking to some amazing people, that is very rarely the case.
Yeah.
It's like the iceberg sort of picture where
for sure.
That's the tip and people don't see what's underneath the water.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was life like pre-2016?
God, pre-2016? Shit. I can't even remember that far back.
How long were you making music pre-Don't Worry About It?
So, yeah, I was making music for, man, close to 7 years by then. I was producing for ads, so like TV commercials, things like that. And, hey, Kanye. Hey.
He's very excited.
And, yeah, so it was about 7 years of kind of commercial work. And I'd been writing and producing for tons of different artists. But I'd never given myself that shot, you know? So don't worry.
Why? Was that a self-esteem thing, a self-belief thing?
That's a good question. I think it was like navigating the scope of things. Like, I wasn't even sure who I wanted to be. I knew what I looked up to. I looked up to like Timbaland, producer, Kanye, as we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. I looked up to these people, but I was like, what do I bring? And I did think it was production for a long time. So yeah, well, it wasn't so much confidence. I think I was just trying to navigate the waters. And then when I did finally get into writing, I loved it. I really love writing music. And I would say it was like accumulation of the 7 years of production mixed with the love for songwriting and the marriage.
Yeah. You mentioned TV ads. Yeah, 2011, you had like an ad in Malaysia for KFC.
Yeah,
what? It picked up. Well, that's so random. What was it? Just a beat?
I was working for an agency, and they send you these briefs, and it'll be like KFC or McDonald's, like happy brief. And you have to make happy music in 30 seconds with the KFC in mind. And so, I was making shit like that all the time, bro. Random sound bites.
And the money's good for those sort of things?
It was good for what I was doing, which was getting paid nothing, you know? So to get like a couple $100 to do that was awesome for me. And again, it was another chance for me to hone my skills, get better at what I do. And yeah, it wasn't massive money, bro. No, I think now it would be.
Yes, yeah, so I'm trying to get my head around this. Why did you stick with the music and not get like a 9-to-5 job? Because you're a young dad at the time.
Yeah.
You became a dad at 18?
Yeah, no, 19.
19. Teenage dad.
Yeah.
There must have been like immense, and you're, we'll get into this later, but you're like the sole carer. Like you've been mum and dad, which is, it's so cool.
Yeah. Cool. It's cool as one of words.
Oh, no, I'm sure it's, I'm sure there's so many challenges, but, but it's like, yeah, I mean, there's so much to unpick and chip away at with you, but you've got a complex relationship with your dad, and you're from a broken family, and the fact that you've taken this path where you've been like a sole carer for your daughter, it's bloody cool. It's breaking the cycle.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing, like, being a young dad with a daughter and all the pressure that comes with that, must be pressure to, like, get a normal job and get regular income.
For sure, bro, yeah. I do remember the conversation vividly, bro. I was literally, you can't do music anymore. You have to go. This is my mum talking to me, by the way. If you're going to have this kid, you need to go get a job. You need to take care of this kid. And I was like, I do want to take care of this kid, but I want to do music. I was like, I need to do music, you know? It was at a time where I was like, if I don't do something creative, I'm going to murder myself. You know what I mean? And it got, and it was that quite serious. And, you know, I stuck to my guns. I didn't get a job. I ended up going on the benefit, you know. Thank you, Labor. Was it Labor back then? whoever it was back then. And I was able to do a music course. I learned how to produce music. Shout out to AD Keel. I don't know if you know. She's Nija Mystic's first manager.
Love Nija Mystic.
Yeah.
Actually, fun fact, when me and JJ got married in 2004, they played at the wedding.
We just went to his wedding. One of the wedding,
Donald McNulty.
Yeah. We just went to his wedding.
Oh, how good. Yeah, no, they were
full circle.
Because they were a massive radio band at the time, and they were like, oh, hey, we'll play your wedding. We're on the house. And then one thing I didn't realize is like just how much kit they had and stuff. Yeah. So we had to fly six of them to Queenstown for the wedding.
Yeah, yeah. They on the house, but you got to pay for the travel.
That was so good though.
Yeah.
Right, so what would you have done as a job?
Man, I'd had jobs here and there. I was folding boxes for Target, the material company. So I was folding boxes. I got pretty good at folding boxes, bro. Because you literally do that for about 6 hours a day. I did. What else did I do? Paper route. I was a laborer. I was taking care of my friends. Like, I feel like I was taking care of my friends' like gear and like holding it as like a storage for music gear and like anything I could do. Producing music for ads, whatever I could do to kind of prove to my mum I don't have to get this job. I'll do anything but get a job. You know,
that's so. And hindsight, it's probably good that she like applied that. Like pressure on you, breathing down your neck or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, bro, I think it's, sure. Like, there was a reality to what she was asking. She was actually asking me to be a good father, you know?
Yeah.
And bless her, you know? Like, I was selling her a pipe dream. I'm like, I'm going to be a paid musician. and it's hard to see that when it doesn't look like that, you know. So yeah, she's awesome. She's a huge supporter of mine now. Obviously, she loves me dearly. I love her dearly.
Yeah, and I mean, you kind of manifested this, didn't you?
I feel like.
Yeah, you're a hardworking dude. So
you're a fucking hardworking runner, bro. I feel like all you're doing is running. Every time I see you running stories,
I'm sure a therapist could have a field day on it. Like, what are you running from? What are you? yeah. There's got to be some thing behind it. But yesterday we were going to do this podcast, and it had to be rescheduled because you had like a writing session. Then I was listening today on my run to your new album that's just come out, your fifth album,
Dadson, which
you say is your final rap. Why? So you've just put out a new album. What are you working on writing now?
Man, I'm doing so.
Are you just always writing?
Yeah, man. It's funny. My partner kind of snickered at me just then because she she understands, like, not many people get it behind the scenes to what it's like to be with someone like that. It's not all fun. Like, a lot of it is difficult to deal with someone who's like present and not present in the same time, so I understand it is difficult, but I'm always writing, bro. I'm always writing stuff. I got a new project called Sergeant Nick, which I won't get too much into, but it's a dance project, and it's not rap. It's like the complete opposite.
Yeah, because you've said that this fifth album, Dad's Son, is your last rap album. Is it sort of like, it feels like it's almost like your autobiography and something that you've done for your daughter?
For sure.
Yeah, so your daughter's how old now?
She's now 13.
Yeah.
12, 13, yeah.
So there's a song in there where you talk about the finding out you're pregnant and you go through, do I keep the baby or not
way.
Keep the baby?
yeah,
like how does she feel about that?
Oh, man, it's funny you say that. she doesn't like, you know, I'm still the not cool dad. I'm still in the same trope as everyone else. Yeah. So when I release the song, she's like, it's not that cool. Even though like maybe her friend's like, he's so cool, she'd be like, no, it's not that cool. And so I'm still dealing with that, you know. So she has heard those songs and I think she gets a cool perspective because it's like, it's not me talking to her, I'm literally rapping. So she doesn't have too many thoughts about it though. I think she just laughs and she's like, oh, see, you drink. Like, see, you drink alcohol. You're telling me when I grow up, I'm not allowed to? I'm like, yeah, well.
It's quite funny the takeaways that kids can get from these things,
fully,
eh?
Fully.
And there's, I don't know what the name for them is, whether it's like a skit or an interlude or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of spoken bits in there.
Yes.
That's how the album opens, and it's you, it's young you talking to you today. As a therapy session.
Mm.
Is that true? You were seeing a therapist when you were 11?
Man, from 11 to 17, yeah.
How often? Like weekly, fortnightly?
Yeah, weekly, bro, every Friday from school.
And for anger management?
Anger management, I had trouble kind of sitting still. My mum did think I had ADD, and I think I was diagnosed by the school person. They said, oh, you know, exhibiting ADHD. I'm still not sure if I do, but the counselling was kind of a place to go where I felt safe to talk about things that were happening at home or, like, just creatively have a talk. Sometimes would sit and do nothing, you know, like, just draw. I'd be drawing.
Mm.
But it was just a space for me, and I had that space for years. Yeah, man.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And at a very young age, too.
Yeah.
Why were you so fucked up?
That's a great question. Bro, I still feel like I still am very much that way.
Can I just say you may still feel that way, but the kings that I've got to know, and this is only since 2016, is just like hardworking, disciplined, reliable, always on time, always courteous, always polite, always nice. I don't know what you see when you look in the mirror, but
maybe
from an outsider's perspective, he's a good man.
Maybe it was all that work.
Well, yeah, it's a lot of work. I was like in my mid-40s before I went to a therapist for the first time. And
really?
Yeah. I probably should have done it a long time earlier.
Yeah. I don't know if 11's the right age either, but I mean, yeah, maybe in between there. Yeah. Why so late for you?
I think I was just scared.
Yeah.
Because you're like, where do I start? Where do I start? But as soon as you get into that room, you realise, oh, they're the trained professional. They'll lead.
For sure.
So that's a lot of work. Why were you so angry?
Man, I don't know if anger was a fair assessment of what I was. I think the frustration from not being able to communicate effectively, like, so I could only it's like the equivalent of a baby trying to yell like I'm hungry, right? And like all they can do is cry. So for me, all I could do was punch walls and like be exert anger. It's not that I was necessarily angry. It was just frustration of being able to say like,
I didn't get that. Again.
Shut up, sir.
Or, still angry.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Smash that fucking phone down. Yeah, yeah. So it was, yeah, the frustration of being able to say things like I miss my dad, you know, not being able to say those words as a kid because you don't even know that that's what's going on. Mm. So, yeah, again, when my dad wasn't around, you know, I'm like yearning for a male energy that I don't have, and I don't know how to say that, so I'm punching walls and throwing rocks at windows and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So so you're just angry and you just don't know how to articulate
for
it.
For sure. And yeah, like, I mean, man, as a kid, bro, I look at kids now and I think they're so advanced in some ways, and then I think they're also silly in a lot of ways. Yeah. You got tech because they can read anything. They can Google things now and they seem smart. Even my daughter, like, she'll tell me things that I didn't know about emotions. Like, she'll say, oh, Dad, you know, this feeling comes from this, and did you know that if you talk about this? I'm like, how are you this young and understand this? So it's a new world, where back then I think it was a lot more about shut up. Like, just shut up and get on with it, you know, go for a run.
Yeah. How old are you
now? I'm 33. Yeah.
Yeah, see, I'm 50. I'm almost like another generation, like older than you. And right.
So you must think the same about us. Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, you got fucking.
No. I'm guessing there's been like just huge like seismic leaps like in the last generation in terms of technology information and everything.
For sure.
So yeah, so go back to the real early years. So so your mum and dad broke up when you were a young age.
Yeah, young.
Dad's Māori, mum's Samoan, but was adopted out to a Palangi family.
Did some research, good man, yes.
Yeah. So they broke, were they ever together with you, or did he bounce from
you? Yeah, so I got a couple years, I think, with Dad. I want to say age of five or six. Yeah. So I remember him. Like, there's memories for sure, and I see photos, so he was around. But, as a kid, you don't know. You're making, you're piecing it together as you go, you know. So all of a sudden, Dad's not there, and you just think, oh, he's probably just gone to the shop. Like, you know, you don't know. You're just like, oh, he'll be around soon. And then you see him in a weekend, and you're like, oh, he's back. And you piece it together.
Right.
With very horrible tools. You're piecing together like a fucking clay thing that you have no idea how to do. So, bad analogy. But yeah, the absence was, I wasn't sure if I knew he was around or not. I just felt he was absent. Yeah.
Mm. And your mum, that was a nasty breakup, right?
So she talked shit
about him?
Yeah, I don't think they liked each other too much. And my mum, for fair reason, you know, I think about these. There's so many kids that I know that have gone through the similar thing of having a broken home. And sometimes the mum will react in a way because she's been hurt, you know, whether it be cheating, whether it be physical, whatever it is. And the reaction without her knowing could affect the kids, you know, but I have to forgive her knowing that she didn't have the tools to communicate that either. So,
she's just probably just like projecting her anger.
She's just angry, bro, fair enough. I'd be pissed off too.
You should have sent her to anger me.
Yeah, maybe she was sending me because she was secretly like, what did you learn? What tools did you learn?
Yeah. But that, you look back now from the perspective of a guy that's been, you're doing the solo dad thing. Did she do a good job?
I think she did a great job. Yeah, man. Yeah, she raised us well. Like, she raised us well, man. I'm a courteous guy. Respectful to women for the most part. She's taught me how to be lovely. Saying please and thank you. You know, she ingrained that in me to be courteous. I pull chairs out. I pour people glasses of water. And just, that's innate in me from her.
Yeah.
My dad's taught me how to be a businessman and how to be a man more recently. But yeah, my mum lives within me and my dad.
How do you mean? What aspect about being a man?
Walking tall, being able to walk tall. And I don't know if you remember when we first started, when 2016, when I first started doing radio runs, bro, my shoulders were hunched back. I see photos and stuff of it. I was really nervous. scared to be in a room and take up space.
Oh, so you're trying to make yourself small.
Yeah. Just naturally doing that. And
I never noticed that. I just thought you were a humble guy.
Oh, that's
like a guy that was sort of, you know how we talked before about the iceberg thing.
And yeah,
it sort of felt like you were just suddenly in the spotlight, like a deer in the spotlight.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
And I guess for someone who I would consider myself an introvert, which is awkward because I'm a performer, right? But yeah, I did feel like a deer in headlights is a good way to put it. Mm. So my dad kind of being in my life taught me how to pull my shoulders back, take the space and own it. Yeah.
Shit, so you're still doing work, eh?
Yeah.
You're still a work in progress.
Yeah.
Oh,
bro, forever, man.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, until we're gone, you know?
Yeah. Well, no, that's cool. I fully agree. It's like a growth mindset. But I think a lot of people just sort of give up and they go, well, this is how I am. Yeah. You know, take it or leave it.
You think so?
I think a lot of people are like that. But I think it's a great way to be, to, you know, always have work-ons and always be tweaking and trying to improve yourself.
Yeah. I actually never thought of it like that. Like, I figure everyone's trying to do the right thing and get better, but...
Everyone wants to be the best version of themselves. But it does take work.
It does take a lot of work.
You can wish it, but that's not going to make it happen.
That's not going to do shit.
Yeah, like I feel like I'm better at communicating on this podcast than what I am with some of my personal relationships, and I know that's something that I'm trying to work on. You know,
bro, just get a camera in between you guys. We're going to do a chat. Just get a microphone in between.
I don't know, I'm obsessed with like pleasing people, and I'll sometimes say yes to things, and then afterwards I'll be like, fuck, why did I say yes to that? I want to know, is that why you were here today?
No, bro, that's actually quite, that was never a thing. Weirdly, I know what you mean, because I think, I don't know if it's a human thing, like we like to just go, I'll see you, you know. But I think for me, when I started doing business, that attitude isn't always great. Like, if you start saying yes to everything, you burn yourself out.
Mm.
I can't be there for my daughter because I'm doing 300 other things.
Yeah.
And so I actually learned by being a dad and a business owner that the power of no is actually a lot stronger than the power of yes. So,
Absolutely.
I say no a lot more these days.
That's good. It's a powerful word, eh?
Yeah. No, it's really powerful. To mean it. Like, no, I still love you, you know? Like, hey, bro, no, but I love you.
Mm.
And yeah.
Yeah, I think people respect that honesty. Your mum and dad split when you were like, say, five-ish or so. So who's in the house? It's you and your older brother.
Me, my older brother, my little sister, and my mum.
Yeah. So your older brother, he was kind of like your male figure in your life?
He became it, yeah. He kind of was thrust into it, I guess, by way of default. Strong dude, man. Very, very strong character. Yeah.
Mm. And was he was a bit of a low-key bad dude?
Yeah. Oh, not Loki. he's just a gangster, man. I think for people like me, Māori Polynesian, it's not uncommon to have a man thrust into that role early and then to have to wield the responsibilities of a young father, brother, or cousin. Yeah. But I feel like I'm doing this a lot. It feels like we're having a root. Like, every time I laugh, sorry, bro. If that comes on your thing, sorry, bro.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's definitely not being edited out. So you were, from what I've read, you were sort of heading down that path as well. Like,
bro.
You had street smart, so you never got in trouble. But what were you doing? Just dealing weed?
Yeah, bro. Oh, it's so funny. Like, it's funny because I know my daughter might watch this, but bro, survival. Survival is the best way to put it. Like, it wasn't that I was doing one thing or anything. It's just survival. Like, you do what you can. At that age, I had a big chip on my shoulder around blaming the police and white people for problems. That I think that just comes in with the narrative of being in the hood. So I had these kind of chips on my shoulder, and to fall into line, you play ball. You know what I mean? You go with your cousins to these places and you go to these house parties and you do these things that they do because there's no one telling you don't do that, you know. So you're just rolling with the punches. I was doing stupid shit for sure when I was younger.
You ever get caught or get in trouble?
I think the worst thing I got caught was like spray painting. And it was literally caught red-handed. Like, yeah. I spray-painted, and there was red paint in my hands. The cops come, and they're like, "Who's been spray-painting?" I was like, "Not me. Check my hands."
Yeah. Red paint. Actually, yeah, there's a line about that in that that album we're talking about, Dad's Son.
Yeah.
So then what happens? They you get diversion, you get in trouble, they just take you home?
They take you home, they tell you to clean your shit, you clean your thing. It was lucky it was wet, so it came off. And then I got home and I'd get a hiding, yeah.
From your mum?
Yeah, for being naughty.
Was she... it's funny. It does sound like I'm from a middle class white family, but it was the same sort of thing. I remember being like 14, 15. Me and my mates, like, this is when you used to get like little double happy firecrackers.
Oh, yeah, sick.
Like tiny little dynamite sticks. So yeah. We'd go and me and a bunch of mates would go like knocking on people's doors, light one, and then run off. The police gave me a ride home, and I remember they dropped all my mates off first, and then I was last. I was like, "Please, can you guys just drop me around the corner? Like, my dad's going to give me a fucking
hiding." You're going to get smacked. Yeah.
And it was like, it was never like a beating or anything. It was always like a done and. In the terms of a correctional sort of environment, like put me over the bed and give me the belt,
right.
And he'd say, "This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you." Yeah. Absolute bullshit.
Yeah. I'll see the belt.
But was your mum? Yeah, was it a controlled?
It wasn't like I think a belt is probably your dad being nice. You know, he's found something that's kind of like I think my mum would just. I'm painting her out to be. Like horrible.
No, because it's and I share my parents' story is I suppose a vulnerability exchange in a way, because it's like, you know, your parents do the best they can with the tools they've got at that time.
Yeah, fully. And so, well, if you imagine like a growing young boy, a slap's not going to work anymore, so you've got to find other things. So
how old were you then with the spray paint?
Oh man, shit, that's quite young too. I want to say 13, 14.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bit of a blur, but it's all in that young teenage era.
Mm.
I was even drinking at that age, where I was drinking at 12.
Hennessy, I believe, according to the album I heard today.
Bro, it's gross, man. It's gross. It's gross to think, like, my daughter's 12, bro, you know? I look at her now and I think, fuck, I could not imagine her drinking a bottle of a 40-ounce in a park.
Yeah.
But...
What were you doing? You were just trying to numb the pain, or just like escape yourself, or
I wouldn't even
be
say it was,
cool?
Yeah,
or?
It wasn't even that conscious, to be honest. It was, again, following the pack and just trying to just kick it with my friends, and they were all into the same thing. We all had similar upbringing, similar childhood, so we all, it was just the way it was. Mm. Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So when was the last time your mum disciplined you?
I would have been around that age, because I was just too big. I'm too big, and she was like, "Oh, well, fucking fuck." Just start saying mean things.
Yeah.
You're stupid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's hard, and we'll get to this with, you know, your journey with parenthood as well, but it's like, it's hard when you're fulfilling both roles. Like, you can't be, it's hard to be the nurturing, loving mum, and also the disciplinarian of the household with some wayward boys.
For sure. As I... I'm older now, and I look back at it. I do understand she had two roles to play.
Yeah.
And she had to exercise what she did for the betterment of us, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a massive article I read about you in one of the papers earlier this year.
Oh.
I think it was when the TV show The Traitors came out.
Sure. Yeah.
And you said in this article you didn't think you'd do very well on a show like Traitors because you're trying to live your life with integrity now.
That was a while ago.
I was quite puzzled when I read that line because, as I said, I've known you for like the last 6 or 7 years or whatever, and you've always seemed like a dude with integrity to me.
That's nice, bro. Thank you. I appreciate that. it's easy to wear a mask in front of people for 30 seconds. I think when all the cameras are on, you can put on a face. And I think what I meant by integrity, or at least being a man of integrity, was to exude it not only in my life but in my professional life. Where I feel like in my professional life, I'd hit this stroke of success that I'd never hit before, and no one in my family had hit with that kind of. Actually, no, I lie. My uncle Slade McFarlane was a rugby player. He had a massive thing of success, but I'd hit the success from coming from the streets where I was telling you about, and then to have to navigate the business world with like corporates and talk percentages and like lawyer fees and all this shit was quite scary for me. So I pretended like I knew.
Like fake it till you make it.
For sure.
Okay.
And so that integrity line was like, I'm done with that. I'm going to just be who I am. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So you became a dad at like 18. You got pregnant at 18, dad at 18.
19, yeah.
Yeah, and this autobiographical album, you sort of like sing through that and you talk about how it was sort of unplanned and how you got told.
Yeah.
What was your relationship with the mum? It was like a one night stand, a fleeting sort of a brief relationship.
Yeah, the way the song kind of interpreted it, it was like a one night stand, and kind of like I won't. You know, for her respect, and I've actually never spoken about her too much on these things because we didn't end in a great manner. We talk now, of course, for Navalia's sake, but I'd rather save face for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't say too much other than we were way too young to have a kid together.
Way too young.
Way too young.
Yeah, and in the song you talk about the... It's funny because you're adults, but you're just very young adults at the time. But
we weren't adults, bro. 19 is I consider myself now a late teenager at this age.
Yeah,
bro. Like even kind of you saying you're going into therapy at this age, like your mind must be blown with like what you didn't know about yourself. Like you must feel that way.
Yeah, yeah, I do, and it's exciting learning the stuff about yourself. Like, oh, that's why I do this thing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so like that world, I feel like I'm still doing that today. So. I do feel like a teenager in a sense that of learning.
Yeah. And just like what we were talking about before about your integrity, I think, the fact that you don't really want to say too much about the baby mama.
Yeah, yeah,
I think that speaks a lot of integrity. But you made the decision to keep it. If you don't want to get into this, that's fine. But sure. how did you end up being the sole carer?
Yeah, so that was – I can only relay my version of what happened.
Yeah.
We had an arrangement that we were going to do a split custody thing, and she felt she had opportunities somewhere else for her career. She took those opportunities, and I stayed with Bubba, and that just went on a lot longer than I think was anticipated.
Mm.
That's my version of the story. I'm sure she'll tell you something else, and that's fine. Yeah,
but you're not talking shit about her or anything?
No, of course not.
Right? Yeah, no. And everyone's got their version of it. That must have been fucking daunting.
Yeah.
so you got this baby.
Yeah. Pretty fucking.
there's a saying like it takes a village to raise a child or whatever. Was that the case with you? Did you have good family support?
I was so grateful with my family, man. Like I talk it up like I'm solo dad, but solo to me is that I was a sole carer. But man, my mum and dad came to the party. They looked after me and my mental health. They allowed me to pursue music. So whenever I had a gig or like karaoke night, I'd go to these gigs and they'd watch them for the night, and I'm grateful for that, man. Honestly grateful. If I was actually myself and a baby in a room, who knows? Like that's my solo journey was with my family. Yeah, and I'm very grateful. Like,
yeah. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how old is she now?
So, yeah, 12, 13, bro.
Yeah, what's your relationship like? Really, really tight?
Yeah, tight, bro.
Yeah.
Too tight, you know? Too tight. We're best friends almost to a degree, and it's not good when you're trying to discipline someone and then she'll, you know, you'll be like, hey, go do this. She'll be like, nah. I'm like, fucking hell, you know. And I've also tried my best to not go down beating just because it happened to me. I'm like, oh, well, I know the not benefits of having that happen. So I've tried my best to not ever physically thing with her. So we talk so much, bro.
Mm.
We'll spend like 2 hours talking about if she's done something at school, you know, and I have to explain to her what she's done, and it's such a long process. Where and I even think like, oh, no wonder Mum smacked me, because it's like
it's easier.
Yeah, it's like, oh, shut the fuck up! I'm like, I've got to go to work. You know?
Yeah, that's cool. I noticed in the early days of your career, I say early days of your career, but after Don't Worry About It came out, you'd have her on your social media platforms for a bit. Yeah. You don't anymore.
No,
is that a conscious decision,
bro? I had a fuck, man. You don't know fame. I don't know if you had that with being on radio all the time, but people recognize you on the street. You probably get that still now. Yeah. People just see you out and they're, hey. So I started getting that, which was a new experience, and I was cool with that. But someone went up to my daughter, and I wasn't there. Like, I was at the food court. She was in the mall, like up by the ice cream place. And someone went up to her and was like, I love your dad's music. Tell him I said, hey. And so she comes back from the ice cream shop and she's like, Dad, some guy came up to me and said that he likes your music. And that was the moment I was like, how the fuck did he know that you're my daughter? This is yuck. And so I took her off everything. I had a panic moment and I was like, fuck that. I don't want anyone going up to her. And she was too young for that, I felt like. Yeah.
How old at the time?
Man, she was in school, so five or six.
That seems really inappropriate.
It's creepy as fuck, bro. Really
it is. Creepy, yeah. Were you wild? Where is he?
I really did do that. Yeah, but I don't want to say that on your thing, but I was like, where the fuck is this guy? You're going to smash him. Like, don't ever talk to my dog, bro. To me, it's just gross. Like,
yeah, like, it seems really weird.
You could just recognize her and go, oh, cool, you know, but the fact that he went up, tell your dad, like, bro.
Yeah.
So anyway, I took her off all my socials. I have her on now because she's a lot older. She understands a lot more. But back then, I was very, very nervous to have her out and about. Yeah.
Mm. So 2016 rolls around. Don't Worry About It comes out. What's the story with that? Because the music video, which is up to like 3.4 million views on YouTube.
Fuck, is it?
That's yeah.
Shit. Awesome.
Yeah, I want to get into the finances and stuff and how what sort of money you get from a clip like that.
I made millions.
Yeah. But that video, so the video was shot before the song came out, and it shows you at like one of those blue sky parties or whatever it is. So you were performing.
I was
pre. Don't Worry About It.
You know, generally.
Yeah, generally. Yeah. It does the Breakfast Show on George. Yeah, good dude.
Good friend of mine. Like I, he's a family friend actually. So he was helping me get into the music scene. I dropped a few songs with Dan Ox from Georgia FM as well, and Jeremy Lee was like, bro, do you want to come to Fiji? And I was like, fuck yeah, let's go. Sweet. And like they paid for the tickets and everything, and I emceed, and I thought, while I'm here, why not? Because I'm
so emceed as in like rapping
or? yeah like rapper singing. And
see, there is a performer, but no one really
I was generally his mate. Yeah, for sure. I was not Kings at the time. And so I just thought, I'm never going to be in Fiji again. I should film a music video here. And that was inspiration, literally. Yeah. I was walking around with a camera. Lee was kind of like, bro, you're a bit, what are you doing? Come and chill with us. I'm like, no. This is my only opportunity because I'm never going to make it to Fiji again. You know, and I shot that music video there.
Mm. So then how does the song get out? Like, do you...
Georgia FM, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So do you put it on SoundCloud or whatever, or you just give like Lee a copy or Dan a copy?
Yeah, I chucked it on SoundCloud. Which for anyone who does a SoundCloud a thing anymore? I don't even know. Yeah, SoundCloud. It's kind of like before Spotify. Yeah, I chucked it up on my SoundCloud page. Georgia FM gave it a couple spins because I was Generally's friend and Dan Ox, and nothing happened, bro, to be honest. 3 months go by, nothing happens. It gets like maybe 2,000 spins. I'm thinking, that's a lot of spins for me, 2,000. And I would say in the 3-4 month mark, shit just started getting crazy. Like, I'd get an email from Capitol Records being like, hi, did you release the song Don't Worry About It? I'm like, yeah. They're like, we'd like to talk to you about a deal. And I'm like, what? Like Capitol Records and Island Records and Warner and Sony? And
so just from being played on George?
Just being on, yeah. Just being out.
Was there a moment that you felt the sort of groundswell? Like, oh, I don't know where this is going to go, but this is going.
It was about 3-4 months in, yeah.
Yeah.
So again, like a normal release, you just drop a song and then you hope for the best, right? And that's what I did, and I just did not expect it to do what it did. And yeah,
really, that's interesting because I feel like it's one of those songs. As soon as you hear it, as soon as you hear those opening oohs and ahs, just makes you feel a certain way. I feel like, you know, it just reeks of a hit.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, did you not feel that?
I can confidently say no. I didn't think it. I was sure I liked it. That was all I knew. I knew I liked it, and I knew that I was happy with the beat. And that's it, bro. Yeah.
So you just had no expectation. I suppose you had nothing to go on. Like, no.
Yeah, I never know what a hit, exactly, bro. I didn't know what a hit was.
Yeah. So plays on George, and then other radio, like The Edge, where I was at.
The Edge jumped on, that's where we got to catch up.
Yeah, it was our first time. And ZM, they jump on it as well.
Yeah. How fast do you think that was from there? Because I feel like that was quick. Like, once I got on The Edge and ZM, because you guys were at the time, the stations, like
the mainstream,
yeah. Once we hit you guys, it's like game over and crossover, exactly.
Yeah, is radio still important? Does it still have a place?
Oh man, it's hard to like,
because the reason I bring this up, because I noticed when I was researching this interview, so Don't Worry About It, massive on Spotify, but you've got a song called Six Figures, which I'd hand on heart never heard of.
Yeah, right.
That's got more listens on Spotify. That's had no radio play.
That did pretty well too, yeah. MyFM jumped on that, actually.
Oh, did they?
But okay. I don't think it was... The success of that song was, I guess, the same thing, bro. Like, I really enjoyed the process of making it. I liked the song. It was the first time I'd seen Six Figures in my bank account. That was literally why I wrote the song. Six Figures.
What was that from? Like an advance from...
It was a deal that I did, yeah.
Wow.
A deal when it was... Yeah, just... It was over six figures. It was a six-figure deal.
Fuck, from who?
Without getting into too much detail, yeah. It was just like a couple contracts, one after the other. I can kind of say what it was like. So the Air New Zealand thing was like a big thing. We don't have to talk about that, but I did it.
The safety video.
That was a pretty big.
That's right. I forgot about the safety video. Yeah, you and, was it Julian Dennison?
Julian Dennison and another rapper called, I forget the name. Oh, Maynard.
Fuck, no way. You got like 100K for doing
that. No, I won't say exactly what I would say. I wouldn't say that. But I will say it was a culmination of things in that time.
Right, okay, so you just had, the money's just started piling up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look back now, did it feel like it happened quite suddenly, quite quickly?
From Don't Worry About It?
Yeah. Like just like an exponential curve?
Yeah, bro. Yeah. It really did, yeah, for sure. I don't think anyone could be prepared for something like that, to be honest.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I put on a bunch of weight. Yeah, it was crazy. I remember not being sure who to trust. Do you know what I mean? Like, even some of my friends that I hadn't talked to in a long time popped up again, and I was like, how cool? But then I'm thinking, like, wait, why are they popping up? I never even asked the question, because you don't. And then you kind of see them hanging around more and weird things, and you feel like they're always saying your name, like, oh, yo, bro, the bro. Yeah, and I'm like, we weren't this close.
Yeah.
I don't remember being this close.
Yeah, I mean, I can't relate, but I can imagine that's a level of sudden fame could be quite isolating.
Yeah, it was isolating. That's actually the right word. I felt alone in a time where I was surrounded by people.
Mm.
I never get it well, I think.
So number one for 33 weeks. How does that happen? So the previous longest stay at number one, I think, was Lord with Royals, which was like 16 weeks. How does it? I went back through to look at some of the charts, and it's not like it was a dry spell in music where there was no competition.
There were some big names, bro.
Yeah, it was probably when Justin Bieber was at his peak. Yeah. Chainsmokers were at their peak.
Yeah.
There was a lot of competition. How do you start? Is that from like radio airplays or Spotify listens? Or
I'll give a shout out to Warner for that one. Well, Warner, I was signed to Warner for that single. Huge shout out to Warner. Shout out to Marty. Shout out to Phil. They orchestrated that whole thing. They actually taught me how to create a hit. The song was a hit, like as you said, you heard it as a hit, but there's a machine behind it, bro, and it's like, it's so exciting to watch, you know? You got this radio interview at this time, you're going to do a photo shoot here, then that's going to talk to Nike, and it's like this beautiful machine that I had the privilege of watching them do for Don't Worry About It, and I emulated it for Six Figures.
So how did Warners come along? So they hear it on George or The Edge or whatever, and then...
Yeah, so shout out to Matt Headland, who was my first manager, my first proper manager.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, you know Matt.
I love Matt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sick.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
Bro, he looked after me. He's the one who started my thing. I didn't know that. Of course you would know him, actually, from... No.
I think I first met him when he was at, maybe at Warners. And we went on a trip to Beach Cameron in Fiji with Fur Patrol. And he was looking after Fur Patrol at the time.
Buzz, yes. He's been looking after a lot of artists.
Yeah,
I got an email from Jay Bulletproof, who's passed away since, rest in peace. And he said, yo, you got to talk to Matt Headland. He will look after you with all these emails coming in. He's the guy. So got on a call with Matt. I think he was on his honeymoon with Steph. And he goes, well, I'll call you back next week. And he calls me next week. We do a deal. And within a month, he's like got a deal with Warner. A good deal too. Like a really cool deal. And Don't Worry About It comes out, and the rest is kind of history from there on. Mm.
Like, but the Don't Worry About It was already out, right?
Yeah, yeah, and sorry. No, Don't Worry About It was already out on my SoundCloud, but it hadn't officially been released to radio. On.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And did they try and, were they okay with the music video?
No. No, they fucking hated it.
Because, you look at it now and it's like there's apps on your phone where you can put a video like for that sure. together. But
I was the first one to do it.
Yeah, I was going to say that. You were the innovator. No one else was doing this at the time.
I feel like, and it's so funny you say that, a lot of people thought that it was corny. Because, if you look at it, it looks like a home-style video. It's, quite hoary almost. But I remember thinking, this is cool because it encapsulates what it was. It was a dude on holiday in Fiji. It wasn't a music video with a super budget. But, yeah, Warner hated it. Warner was like, this fucking sucks.
What did they want to do? Did they have, a treatment that they wanted to do?
Yeah, they did. It was shit. They wanted me to be around some pretty girls and be singing on a beach in Cameroon. I politely turned it down. I just thought it
because you don't like beaches. You don't.
Yeah. No, bro. I just was dumb. It just felt dumb.
Where did that confidence come from to say no to that? Because I was saying before
that was around when my dad came in. That's what I'm saying. That's the walk tall stuff. It came around there because my dad was around and he used to ask me questions. And that's kind of how he fathers. He'll be like, he won't even say no. He'll say, "What do you think?" And it was similar with the music video. I was like, "Do you want to shoot another video?" And I'd be like, "Not really." He'd be like, "Why?" And I'd be like, "Oh, I think the video goes itself." Okay, cool. That's your answer. So then I'd go back and say, "I think the video is good by itself."
Mm. But that takes a lot of confidence, I think, to stand up for that. Because you're like, this is their job. They know what they're doing. What the fuck do I know?
Yeah.
I think that says a lot about you because it'd be easy to just buckle.
Yeah, confidence is a cool word. Ignorance could be another way of putting it. Stupid and ignorant. Posed as confidence. I appreciate the compliment, bro. Mm. Yeah, I like to think now I'm more confident, but I think back then it was a lot of ignorance and probably me thinking I knew what was right. Like you said, in front of someone who's done this for years, I thought I knew what was right, and a bit Kanye of me, I think. Mm. A bit Kanye Westy of me to try to do that.
Mm. Oh, no, that's really cool. And then, so when a song goes to number one, it stays there for 33 weeks. Do you get much money from that?
No.
So the money comes from like the Air New Zealand deal, doing live shows.
So
what do you get? Like it's the biggest song ever. Yeah, and it gets played on the radio every 3 hours or whatever for a couple of months. You get like some money from that?
Yeah, for sure. It's like a royalty.
How much is it? Just fuck all.
Nah, it's just it's a better way to say it is it's quarterly, so it's. In the long term, it's actually a lot of money, but in the short quarterly period, it seems like not much, for a number one hit song. Like, everyone's saying, "Yo, you got the number one hit." I'm like, do I? Can I get guess? So, yeah, it's if I could put a figure on it back then, I can barely remember, but it was, I want to say, $1,500 every 2 months?
Yeah, it's not a lot, eh?
No, it doesn't sound like much, but, still... Today it's kind of like that.
Right.
So since 6 years ago, that's plus the other hit songs, plus the other songs, it starts to make sense. But at the time, it's like, I got a number one hit song and this is all you get in royalties.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's from radio, the money that radio pays.
Yeah.
And then, so Spotify, it's like 25 million listens or something. You get much money from that?
It's 0.008 cents per stream. So, I mean, do the math. I don't even know what that is. I think it's like 257 streams. For $1. Something like that, bro. Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy.
So if you're Ed Sheeran thinking out loud, it's fine.
Yeah, you're good. Yeah, fuck you. If you're Ed Sheeran, you're all good.
It's YouTube, all right?
So I think the royalty's million. A bit better. Yeah. But, it's all, again, little pieces of the pie.
Yeah.
It makes a nice pie.
Yeah.
It's
still chicken feed, though, isn't it, really, from the song itself?
To be called the number one hit guy, for sure. You would think, because everyone's like, yo, you're the dude, and... I'm grateful for all of it, though, bro. I don't want to sound like I'm not grateful.
Oh, no, not at all. It's just an interesting insight, because I suppose there's this... I mean, through my years in radio, I saw so many people that, you know, were very good musicians and in bands or whatever, and they end up just giving up because it's just hard.
It's hard, bro.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard fucking work out there. Like, for every, I don't know, 660 or Dave Dobbin, you know, there's someone that's struggling to put food on the table.
100%.
So the money comes in from other things. So you do, like, a live show, you get five grand, 10 grand.
Yeah, live shows are cool. You get a couple grand for that, and then you also get the royalties, and also on top of that, sponsorships. So, like, you know, I might do a deal with, I haven't done with Nike, but like Nike might approach me and do it.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of Nike.
Yeah. You know those little guys? Yeah. So, yeah, and like, so a combination of those things, you end up being able to form a bit of a business. Yeah. And merch, selling merch. And
Have you done all right? Are you doing all right?
Yeah. Yeah, good, bro.
Yeah. You managed to, like, did you buy a property or anything? Or?
No. That's the one thing I should have done. COVID happened at a weird time, bro, for me. I was about to tour China. I'd been doing a bunch of stuff in Hong Kong, and we set up at, like, man, it was a 15-show tour in China, which was going to be real lucrative for me and for the people. And I set up an alcohol company there as well, so we're going to sell the liquor as well, so we're going to have monopoly on the gig. COVID hit, and everything we'd done up to that point just crashed, bro. I couldn't go over there to see the agents. They couldn't come here. It was a mess. And so up until that point, I really felt like I was on this high of, like, I'm going to be in Forbes one day. Like, you know, I felt that way. Where after COVID humbled me in a way where I was like, I actually got to get smart with my money. And that was where property came in.
Mm.
And I was a bit too, what's the word, excited to look that way. Now I have the wisdom, I definitely would think a lot smarter than I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, speaking of COVID, so your partner's here today. Hello. You guys got together pre-COVID?
So just on the verge of the bubble, right? She actually doesn't know who
I am. How long has it been? Like 4 years?
Yeah, three,
like
four.
2020.
Yeah. Oh, 2020, yeah. 3, yeah.
This a long relationship for you? Are you a relationship guy? Are you...
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Is this quite short? Don't you think? Is 3 years long or short?
I reckon it's getting quite long. I wanted to bring this up because of I'm just, like, intrigued about the complexities of having a partner when you're raising a child as well. Like,
she also has a child.
That would make things easier.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think
in terms of the understanding side, like,
oh, for, yeah, so, actually, so, that's, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, when you're dating, like, when, like, did you say it on the first date, or like, hey, I'm a dad, I've got a daughter?
Nah. No. No, unless I know that they, how do I say this? Fuck it out. If I know I'm just gonna have fun,
I tap and gag.
Yeah, then no, not at all. Like, what's the point?
Yeah.
But,
well, it's transactional at that point, isn't it? They don't need to know. They don't care.
Where I think...
Were you a bit of a man whore in the don't worry about it days?
No, not the don't worry about it days. Nah, it's just when
I'm... don't worry about it.
Yeah. When I'm single, bro. So I was actually in a relationship during don't worry about it.
And, right.
When I'm single, I just get excited. Yeah. And so when I was actually single during... after my breakup with the don't worry about it partner, I was kings for the first time, and I'd had money for the first time.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of fun to be had that I hadn't had.
Mm. I suppose it goes back to, like, what you were saying before about, yeah, when Don't Worry About It came out, how you didn't know who to trust or whatever. I suppose it's the same with women as well. It's like, are they just using me? And if so, I'm fine with that, but that's what the relationship is.
That's actually interesting. I don't think I ever looked at it that way. Because, like you said, it was transactional. It was always like, ah, fuck it. We'll go out on a cruise or whatever. Mm. It's all good. You're right. It's kind of... transactional is such a yuck way to put it, but it's the right way to put it. It's like, we know what we're doing.
Well, you're getting something out of it, they're getting something out of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Everyone wins.
Yeah, yeah. So that was definitely... it was a fun transactional period. Oh gosh!
Oh so with partners, it's like, I suppose you've got to be, like, super sort of protective of your daughter. Like, at what point did you introduce partners to them?
I think what you said was cool. Actually, like with us, we that understanding of, like, school drop offs and, like, I've got to do this thing with kids. My son's got soccer, my daughter's got netball. Like, it's not, you don't have to explain it, you know? Mm. It's just like, yeah, got it, cool. I'll see you later. Where I think with someone who doesn't have a kid, it'll be like, school drop-off yeah. every day at 3 o'clock. Oh, so I...
Yeah. Yeah, you never have any time for me.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there is definitely a benefit in that. Parenting styles comes up. Like, we've talked about our parenting styles. We have different... She has a son, I have a daughter. So we have different ways of communicating, you know? And that's been challenging for us. But it's all, like... It's all in stride, bro. It's all actually, like, quite... If you got the fundamentals, communication, anything's all good.
Yeah. Mm. What about your daughter wanting to call anyone mum? Is that that ever...
I know what you're talking about, yeah, motherfucker. yeah, she's had too many mums over the years. Oh, man. That's
awesome. I heard you on another podcast tell you about
this. Yeah,
it's the... yeah, do you want to retell it or nah? Not really. We don't have to.
No. Or, like, let's just say during the transactional phase of my life, she accidentally said, hey, are you my mum to someone?
After she walked in and caught you horizontally.
Next. I'm in the dog box now because I'm walking home, I think.
You seem to be one of these people, and I can relate to some of these traits. Like, feels like you're always looking forward. You're always looking at what's next, what's next. But have you had like chance to like pause and reflect about some of the accomplishments and some of the pinch myself moments? And
it was COVID. Like I said, COVID was the thing that did it. Like, only by the grace of God that would happen. You know, otherwise I would have kept sprinting. I'm just that way wired. So COVID kind of forced me to sit down, look at my life, look at my family, look at my finances, look at everything, and have an honest chat with myself. So yeah, but honestly, if COVID didn't happen, I probably would be in China right now being a touring artist and having a whole different life to the one I've led.
So, well, could you go to China now, or are you just not interested?
There was a time for it. Rap wasn't really a thing in China, but now it's actually a lot popular, but we were kind of on the precipice of it becoming cool. So I just think it's timing probably wouldn't be great now.
Yeah, but there's some amazing things the way that happened as a result of that, like financial reward and whatever else aside, like opening for TLC.
Didn't
you open for Dua Lipa?
I got to meet Dua Lipa at the Edge. I feel like I met her at Warner, and I think I met her at the Edge as well.
Right.
Did she come to the Edge?
Okay, yeah, she did. Yeah.
She's cool.
Oh, you just met her there, like you're just waiting outside with your phone for a selfie.
Yeah, no. Oh, there was that time, and then at Warner, she was at Warner. And Ed Sheeran was there as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of the beauty of being with Warner, like an label, sorry.
Mm.
You get to see all these famous people.
Yeah, so what happened there? So Warner's sort of like schmoozed you and they got you to sign. And you've got your own thing now, Archangel.
Archangel Records.
Archangel, beg your pardon. So you got out of your recording contract with Warner's.
Yep.
How come?
I think it was for me a matter of... I can't say anything mean about them because they... actually taught me the game. Mm. And I got huge love for Phil, Jeremy, everyone that was up there.
You can be mean if you want, though. Mitch James was on here and he shat on Sony pretty hard.
Yeah.
No.
Mitch is a good talk,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. No. I appreciate him and I appreciate you. And and it's quite funny. Like, you really do like walk the walk, don't you? Like, you talk about living with integrity and then you just never... You never waver from that.
Nah, man.
You're not shitting on anyone.
Nah. There's no need to, you know?
Yeah.
People are shitting on everyone, bro. The world sucks sometimes. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like to aid in that. But I will say I was a young up-and-coming kid, and I felt like, again, you might think it's confidence, but I did feel like now looking back, it might have been just ignorance that I was like, I can do this. I don't need you. That was really the thing. Talked to my manager. I was like, look, I want to get out of this contract. I think I want to do it myself. I want to take complete ownership. And my manager got in with them, and we got out of the contract. Then I started Archangel.
Yeah, so for the naive, like, what is the pros and cons of, like, being an independent artist versus being on a label?
That's a fucking awesome,
like,
question.
From like, a perspective of someone that's been in radio for many years, it's like they have people called pluggers that come in.
Yes.
And their job is to basically speak to the radio
programs. Do they still do that?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. So they'll come in and you'll be like what's known as a priority artist.
Yeah, yeah.
So they'll be like, oh, you know, Warners will come in saying, they'll be like, oh, new Ed Sheeran song, new Dua Lipa song. Yeah. And if you added the King song, and they'll be like a, you know, like a squeaky wheel that gets the oil.
Yeah,
and
wow.
They'll push you hard.
I do remember that. I wondered if that was still a thing now just because of Spotify, but it probably is. Yeah, so during the label days, you have everything taken care of. I don't know if you've probably done this all yourself for the most part, right?
Yeah.
So the label would do it. I'll just be like, I want two microphones, this, I want two cameras. They'll be like, gotcha. And they'll do it. Whereas independent, you're the one fucking hanging up the chain. You're the one getting the sign writer emailing. So it's literally having a team. That's really the benefit. Also, the downfall is you're paying that team. So you're paying them, you know.
Yeah, and often you don't. I mean, it's a trick for young artists, isn't it? Yeah. Like, you don't realize, but it's like the advance that you get.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a gift
for sure.
It's coming out of your potential future earnings
for sure. And so that as well. When I had success with Six Figures and a couple other solo songs, I realized the work that goes into it, but I also realized the revenue that comes from it. I almost like 10x'd my money, honestly, just from that one move. Yeah.
Wow.
My royalty checks changed. They were a lot bigger. Everything changed. Like,
was it a bloodbath at the time? Was it a nasty split or was it?
Nah, man. Nah. And that's why I say I love to Warner, because it was kind of this thing where it was like, well, I'm going to stay here and be miserable. You're going to hate me, or we can just end this. And it was amicable. Mm-hmm. I still talk to Phil, who's part of Warner, and I got love for him, man. He's a man.
Who's that, Phil Helling?
Yeah.
Yeah, good dude.
Yeah.
They're all nice people. Everyone's just doing their best and doing a job.
Just business.
And so did they have the rights to Don't Worry About It?
I think they still do now, or it might just be up now, so it should be back in my ownership.
Right.
So, yeah.
Was that a tussle to get it back? Or?
Oh, just contract.
Yeah.
In the contract, yeah. So now I could, re-release it with who knows, might just hold it for a little bit and just be like, come back, baby. Welcome home.
Well, otherwise you could have let them have it and done like King's version, like Taylor did.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, that reminds me. So that song, Don't Worry About It, you played it to your dad when you first wrote it, and your dad was like, the lyrics are a bit shit, or something like that?
No. So we're in Whakatane, and it was just a Christmas thing, and the story that it's kind of the most common story, and it is the right story, but there was another part to it. I was sitting on the beat for months, bro. I just loved the beat. I was like, the beat's sick. Because, you know, the ooh, ahs, that's the song in itself.
Makes you feel a certain way as soon as it starts.
Yeah.
There's a few songs like that. Like, another one that springs to mind, like, for me personally, music's so subjective, would be Clocks from Coldplay. Okay. As soon as you hear that piano at the beginning,
ding,
it's
ding,
like,
ding, 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 ding,
just makes you feel a certain way. And your song has the exact same effect on me. So OMC, How Bizarre, that's another
one. Yeah, sick. Yeah, the guitar, ding, 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 ding. Yeah. So that was it for me. I was like, the beat, I'm sold. And then as I was writing the lyrics, we just had no cash. I had no money at the time. And it was kind of like a don't worry about it. Like, my dad was just like, oh, don't worry about it. It's going to be cool. And my daughter's on the playground and... Run free, boy, run free. That's what I would have said to the young me. Was literally the lyric as I'm looking at her on the playground. That's what started it. Bro. And like I said, you never know it's going to be. You never know. Maybe there are people, like, maybe Michael Jackson knew he was going to be a hit record guy, but you just don't know. Like, I still release songs now that get a lot of love, and I'll be like, fuck, cool. So that's the one. Like, you can never really know.
So since then, have you had like a... had a thing where you write a song and you're like, is this going to be another Don't Worry About It?
Right. You mean like the...
like almost like chasing that high again.
Bro, you know what? I feel like I've done it enough times to not be scared to release what I want now. Six Figures had massive success. You Do, which was another single, Help Me Out.
Help Me Out's a massive one.
Yeah. So I've had that success... enough times for me to go like, cool, now what do I want to release? Like, now I've done the commercial success route, as an artist, what do I want to say? And I think that's where I've been at for that album anyway. This is the most recent one.
There's another really good song which had a little bit of radio play. It's probably my favorite song of yours, like the Rebound one.
Rebound? Oh, yeah.
With the whistle. I feel bad for your rebound.
Temporary Me.
Temporary Me, yeah. That's right. That's a great song. How did you not remember it?
Yeah, bro, I've written a couple songs.
Yeah, how many? You're quite a prolific songwriter, right?
Yeah, bro, over 1,000, man, for sure.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's in the span of how many years we've been doing it. A long time.
Yeah, so yesterday when you couldn't come over and do the podcast because you were writing, is it because you're like, I've got something I need to put pen to paper? Or do you like have, no, tomorrow at 10 o'clock to midday I'm writing and you just sit down with a blank?
What do you reckon? It's just in and out. Eh? Yeah, it's like, bro, like, it's a bad thing, actually, I think. So, like, when inspiration hits, I'll kind of just hit it, like, on, like, straight away. And sometimes that will take me out of being a dad, you know? Like, I'll have a commitment that I'm like, fucking, I'll get stressed and feel things. So
it's like that's like an ADHD thing, hyperfixating.
I wonder if it is. I wonder if like,
yeah.
My mum was like, yeah, you were diagnosed, and I was like, fuck, I don't know, because the way I understand ADHD is you can't focus, but then I can hyperfocus.
Yeah, well, that's the confusing thing about it.
Yeah,
I reckon I've got it as well, but
yeah,
these things were never diagnosed when I was a kid.
Right.
But yeah, you find it hard to focus, but then you can hyperfixate on something. When you hyperfixate on something, apparently you're like a dog with a chew toy, and you just want to get it done, and you lose hours.
That's another form of ADHD.
Yeah, it's a...
Maybe I got it, bro.
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't know.
Why does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah. So what were the original lyrics that your dad challenged you on?
It wasn't that he challenged. It was just that I was writing it in here. He was just like, don't worry about it. It was literally the lyric that stuck. Like, don't worry about that we didn't have money. Don't worry about that. Everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that was the thought that stuck with me.
Right.
But I was writing just writing.
Yeah, and how did you sort of mend your relationship with your dad? It was quite badly fractured, eh?
It was bad.
I feel like you were quite like burned or scarred from the experience.
For sure, yeah. I think any young boy is, you know, who doesn't have a male role model. How did we start that? I was still doing counselling, and I did a course called, have you heard of Landmark, bro? Landmark Forum?
No, I don't think I have.
Okay, so it's like a communication course or like a tools course. And that really helped me heal a lot of that relationship, like just that course. The course kind of forces you to do things that have always been on your mind. A good example is like, if I asked you, is there someone in your life right now that you need to have a conversation with? And if whoever the person is that just came to mind, call them. So that's kind of what the course...
Oh my God, yeah. So many people.
Yeah, and so that's what the course does. It's like, gives you a list, and it's like, call them all and say exactly what that thing is. Like, boom, boom, boom. So I call my dad in the course. I'm like, I fucking hate you. You know, you were never there, blah, 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 blah. And then I call my mom, and I'm like, don't hurt me. Please don't beat me up, but I don't like you either, you know.
Is that kind of, I know you're kind of joking, but is that sort of like the tone of the conversation?
Yeah, there's a bit of that, you know. Yeah. Of course, you're always going to be, especially when you're kind of, I was 15 around then, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose you had a lot of stuff to get out.
For sure. And so, so I called my dad, and I'm like, you know, you were never there and all these things. And then he just replied like, it's all good, I love you. And so it was gone, like kind of in that phone call. Like, obviously there was a lot more to heal, but that initial bridge that we couldn't cross for so long was obliterated.
Yeah.
And from there,
just because he sort of like neutralized it, he didn't come back and say, well, fuck you. Yeah, well, fuck you. Don't know this fucking story.
Exactly.
Your mum didn't let me do this.
For sure. It wasn't combative. It was very like understanding. It was a man listening to a kid crying.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a dad telling a son. It was just like a man listening to a kid and that was really the starting point to our friendship now.
And you've got a great relationship with both your parents now.
Yeah. Oh, I love them both, man.
Yeah.
Very grateful, man. Do you know how hard it is to be a parent, bro? It sucks.
No, I don't. I kind of do. Like when JJ and myself were together, we had like a family adoption.
Yes.
One of her nephews came to live with us from the age of like 4 years and 11 months.
I don't know why I thought you had kids.
Yeah, no,
oh, you didn't have kids.
No.
Oh, fuck.
I had a tumor. I've been unable to have kids.
But, oh, fuck. Shit. Weird. Sorry, bro.
It's quite funny, eh? So I had this tumor which was diagnosed and then taken out probably in my early 30s, I guess. And it was just around about the time that JJ and I, we'd married a couple of years and we were starting to have a family. Like, you start to wait for everything to be perfect.
Right.
You're like, And then the way it worked out for you, like, yeah, being like a teenage dad, it's probably, there's never the perfect time.
No. No, that wasn't the perfect time. I'll just let you know, that's not the one.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, I think of people, I almost get slightly envious of, like, parents who have done it. You know, the way that you and JJ were going to do it, like, thought and carefully thought out. When mine was literally like a thing in a park, you know, and I almost don't like that because my daughter's legacy is so much bigger than that. And, yeah, it's like a, damn, I wish I took more thought into it. You know, sometimes I wish I was a fucking virgin, bro. Mm. Honestly, I'm like, man, the amount of people I've been with that have, like, we've given each other energy and it's gross, like. Mm. I feel like
how many? What's your number? You reckon?
Nothing. I reckon one. Just the one on
is
the
couch. Is it like your song, Six Figures?
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm definitely walking up.
Yeah. Oh, really? This is a bit sort of woo woo, but like, yeah, do you think when you've slept with someone, you give like part of your soul?
Now
away?
I do, bro.
Do you?
Yeah. I think back in the day, of course not. I was just flanging everywhere, but now it's like. And even before now, it's important, bro. Like, let's say I come into your house, right, and I just have a shitty day and I'm fucking your energy up. As soon as I leave, it stays. It lingers. I believe that, you know? And you might have a bad attitude and then the next person you interact with, you fuck them off. And I believe that. And so if you're doing something as intimate as engaging in fucking sex, surely that leaves something, bro. Like, that can't just be like, sweet, all right, text you next week. Like, there's something that we've left in that space, and I just don't like that I was so oblivious to who that was growing up.
You know?
Yeah.
But I think that's good, though, eh? If you can grow, if you get to your mid-30s and you don't have any regrets, then I think that's a little bit sad.
Yeah.
As long as you do stuff and you learn.
Oh,
you
for
learn
sure. Oh, that. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. No, yeah. For sure, yeah. I guess I said that in a negative way. I mean,
No. Yeah. You didn't say it in a negative way.
Yeah, no. I'm glad I've done it for sure. Like, the people that I've met are beautiful as well, you know. But yeah, that's I don't know, bro. Just sex is fucking weird.
And is it something that you've thought more about? I mean, you're very content in a long term relationship at the moment, but also
I've always wanted long-term relationships.
Yeah,
like, I'm always in them.
Has your, like, opinion or thoughts on sex changed, like, as your daughter gets older and older and you're like...
That's probably a big part of really? It, too. I think that's probably the main part of it.
You're like, freaking out right now, like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and, like... And, yeah, bro, like, yeah, exactly. I think as I mature, you know, I realise these things and...
How are you going to navigate that? Like, are you going to be protective or are you just going to be, like, a good communicator and conversationalist and...
Yeah,
is the angry kingdom going to come back?
Yeah. It's already come up, you know, to a degree. Like, she's had, she's 12, 13, so she said, I've got a boyfriend, and, like, that kind of young thing, and I have, for the most part, not been what I thought I'd be, which was, like, this, like,
angry
dad with a shotgun kind of thingy.
Yeah.
If anything, I'm just like, oh, how's that, bub? Like, I'm, like, just encouraging her to be happy. So yeah, I mean, there's nothing sinister happening yet. I think maybe at 18, when some guy takes advantage of her, then maybe I'll lose it. But for now, it's love and happy and light and exciting.
Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine what that'll be like. Like when, if someone breaks her heart, like
just
as a dad, because it's like there's probably part of you that thinks, well, I'll go and smash him. But the reality is, you won't.
Of like, course,
you just want to fix your broken daughter.
For sure, for sure. I even think that traditionally, like if you think about marriage. That whole idea doesn't seem that prominent today. Like, I feel like marriage, what was the stats? It was like it's a decline in marriages.
Oh, yeah, I heard that the other day, yeah. But like 40 years ago or something, by the time a woman was 25, over 50% of the population was married.
Yeah,
now it's fuck all.
That's none, bro. Yeah, and that's where she's growing up, where I've kind of always been traditional. Like, I like the role of like male-female marriage kind of thing, so... My daughter's in just a whole new environment, so I wonder. Polygamy?
Yeah.
Like, that's where you can have more than, like, four partners or some shit. And I'm like, man, what if she turns into a polygamist? I'm like, oh, fucking, I didn't even know how to deal with that. Jesus, you know?
Do you want to get married at some point yourself?
Bro, I would. I think I think it's what we got to do, right?
Mm.
Devote.
How do you like? How do you know when? How do you know when it's the right one?
Oh, man, I don't think you can.
Is it just a case of doing it and then just making it the right one? Like doing it and then making it work?
Yeah. I probably sound like a old dude, but like... bro, I've read so many books on like women and trying to be... Not so many books. I've read books on relationships. And it is kind of a matter of picking someone and just choosing them.
Mm.
As opposed to finding the perfect one.
That just doesn't. That's a myth, isn't it? It's a unicorn.
Yeah, bro. You change every 3 years. I think it's 3-4 years. It's like a circadian. Bro, I'm getting too fucking technical. But every couple of years, you change your interest. Like you run now, and you've been running forever. But there'll be a year where you have a different interest, and then you're a different person from that interest. You just your mind changes.
I'd agree with that. I hadn't thought about it from a cyclical perspective, like the amount of time or years. But you're changing and evolving all the time,
for sure.
Yeah.
Or you're hitting the gym. You know, when you hit the gym and you have a good stint of it and you go for like 6 months hard out and then there's a stint where you eat shit for 6 months?
Yeah.
You're a totally different person.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so speaking of eating shit.
I don't eat shit. That's your album.
No, your music is unquestionable. But I don't know if you want to get into this or not because it's very personal. But what happened with
you're quite big
for a while, eh, after? Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. I put on... Jesus, my heaviest was like 189 kgs. Yeah, big, bro.
What are you now?
Fuck, I don't even know. I'm born
120?
140, 130, yeah.
What happened? Was it a psychological eating? Or?
I think kind of what we're talking about, the isolation.
Yeah.
When you hit this like huge strike of fame early, or not early, but quite fast, you have to like release the stress somehow. And so for me, it was eating. I just would eat. Also celebrating, which was kind of funny because in our culture, Māori, you celebrate, you eat when you celebrate, you eat when you're at a tangi, you eat all the time. Like it's kind of, this is what you do. You're eating a lot. And so, you know, I'm winning these awards, so I'll celebrate. I open for TLC, I celebrate. And then when I'm feeling low, I eat. And it's just this vicious cycle of fucking eating, bro. And it got to the point where it was just too big. I was too big. I was struggling to bend and do things. And so I actually got
a gastric sleeve or something. Gastric
sleeve.
Bypass
sleeve. Yeah,
sleeve.
The one where it's cut in half.
Yeah. So what do they? What do they do? They I think make your stomach smaller.
Yeah. There's three different versions of it. This I'm always confused. There's like a sleeve where it's like they cut half of your stomach off. There's a bypass where they remove your stomach, and there's another one where they tie a rubber band to it. So I'm pretty sure I got the sleeve. And essentially it's half your stomach, so you can't eat as much.
So you just have like a little snack and you feel full?
Kind of. Yeah, or the alternative, what I was doing for a long time, still kind of struggle with today, is you purge. You vomit because it's too big.
Unreal.
Yeah, so my mind will still be like, you're hungry because of the way I am. And my stomach's like, you can't eat. So then that message to my brain, to my stomach, sometimes doesn't match, and I'll end up having a vomit. Yeah.
Did you have to pay for that, or was that?
Yeah, I paid for that price.
How much? Like 20? 20,
yeah, 23, 20, yeah.
Was that a big decision, or sort of a no-brainer?
It was a no-brainer for me because I couldn't fucking bend. I couldn't do shit. I was like, this sucks. And going to the gym was definitely a viable option, but it was also, I had money at the time, and there was an opportunity, and I was just like, seize the day, you know. And get it done, yeah.
No regrets about it?
Nah, bro. My only regret is that I didn't get the mental sorted, because like I say, the purging stuff is difficult.
Oh, so you have you still got like a complex relationship with food?
Yeah. Still now.
What is it? What's your weakness? Is it like K-fried or?
Fuck, nah. It's actually like, bro, I love Asian food, eh? Japanese food is actually my favorite food. So it's handy that she's Japanese. Always eating out. Ah, that was stupid. And a snacker.
My favorite word is snacker.
A violent snacker. So when I'm in the studio, I'll have something at hand, like a pack of chips or something.
Right.
Yeah.
What other vices? Did you ever lean on like alcohol or drugs?
Nah, bro.
No.
Nah. Never been much of a party dude. No. I've had fun for sure, but like, nah. It was always food and punishing myself with like no sleep. So, like, I'd work. I'd work, like, till late hours of... Sometimes 2 days straight I'd work, yeah.
Have you seen the Avicii doco?
No.
I mean, it's a sad demise of Avicii in the end. He took his own life. But same sort of thing. Like, he's just on his computer working. Yeah. And his people around him are bringing him food, and he's just head down.
Yeah,
there's some parallels there
for sure.
That's got to be an ADHD thing.
Yeah, fuck, I reckon it's
the hyperfixating.
Okay,
I'll take it. Have you got any therapy about the food or anything, or have you talked to anyone about it?
During the operation, you have to eat jelly, bro. It's kind of like this jelly shit. That's fucking horrible. And during that time, you kind of have to manage your food because you actually don't. You can't purge it because it's like your vitamins and minerals, like everything, in these small packets. So I got good at one point, and then I went through an adjusting period, and then slowly it just started to get worse again. I don't know if I've done the work, but I know what it takes to do it the right way, and it's a matter of doing that.
God, life's exhausting, eh? There's always something to work on.
Oh, I love it, bro.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah, for sure, man.
Yeah, yeah. And how's your mental health? Mentally, you're in a good spot.
Good, bro. Yeah.
Has it always been?
I want to say, yeah. I think I have a lot of tools.
Yeah.
From all the anger management or therapy. I think the hardest time was COVID, but I think that was everyone. Like, it was just kind of like a big thing for everyone.
You're probably in a better position than most because of all that work you've done. I mean, the teen suicide rates in New Zealand are like just alarmingly high, and I think it's because people get angry and frustrated and they don't know how to communicate. Yes, so if you weren't forced to do all that work during those years, who knows where you'd be, or even if you'd be today.
Bro, I was gonna say it's like a catch-22. I talk about it heaps. Like, you know, there's like 8 hours of sleep. There's all these rules to have this perfect kind of life, and it's like. Bro, if I didn't punish myself and stay up two nights in a row, I wouldn't be here. So there's a level of, like, responsible, talk to your friends, and then there's a level of shut the fuck up and get busy. Like, it's a double thing.
Yeah.
You can't have too much, like, oh, today I had a yogurt, and, like, you can't be too that, and you can't be too Avicii. You have to kind of find the balance.
Find that sort of happy medium.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what about The Traitors? So The Traitors is a TV show. Mm. It was on early in 2023.
Can you ask for another?
Oh, yeah. Grab a bottle out of the fridge. Just fill up one of these bottles. So on the Traitors, which is a reality TV show hosted by Paul Henry, given the stage you're at in your life now where you're living with integrity, like, why did you go on a show like that?
The Traitors, yeah. Why, yeah.
Like, it's basically all about lying, eh? And who's got the best poker face, really?
Yeah. Bro, I got pitched that, I want to say by Warner, actually, or it was like a Warner TV show. And the concept was so cool. I've been pitched for like Celebrity Treasure Island and all those other ones. I've just turned them down. I don't know. Like, do you? It's all good. Do what you want to do. But for me, I just felt like I didn't want to be on those shows. This one was the first one. I was like, this is interesting. Like, what a cool concept. And that's what got me on it. And I did it. And I kind of, it was hard, bro. It was very hard. Thank you. It's hard to sit there knowing people are lying to you. You got people like Brooke Howard Smith who's talking 100 miles an hour, and then you got like Colin Jeffries, who's like always smoky looking at you, and like there's all these personalities. So it's
Colin loves that sort of stuff. Loves the game.
Yeah. I actually feel like we became friends on the show.
Yeah, What are your recollections of that? So you turn up. When do you find out who the other contestants are?
On the day.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would have known of most people, I guess?
Yeah, yeah. Like, Mike Peru, I'd seen him. I'd seen everybody around.
Yeah.
But I didn't know them. Now we're locked in this fucking cabin and we got to know each other. So it was cool. But, again, I'm getting to know a version of them that's highly paranoid, you know? I'm not getting to know them. We all talk now. We all got a group chat and we all chat and talk shit.
There's no animosity. With, you got to separate a reality TV show to real life.
You never know, bro. Like some of the stuff that was said, like, it felt real, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there was a point where I got real heated and they took it out of the edit, which is probably the right thing to do. But I was, like, I was angry, man. Like, properly angry. And, so it was real. There was a lot of emotions, but... We all came out the other end happy, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, what other shows have you been asked on? Celebrity Treasure Island, Dancing with the Stars.
Dancing with the Stars, twice I've been asked to do that.
Why did you say no to that? See, Celebrity Treasure Island I can understand because they can portray you in a negative way. Right. Or
I think it was just the shows. I was just like, oh, I don't want to do the shows. Because Traitors, this is the first time it's been done. Where I feel like I would have been like on the ninth version of any of those other shows. So I was like, I don't want to do that. Dancing with the Stars also as well. I was like, I can't dance for shit. So I was just like, why do you guys want me? I was like, and I was big when they first asked me. I was like, bro, who's going to lift me up? No one's lifting me on a tango, bro. Yeah.
Well, that's fun. Any regrets? Anything like you've said yes to or no to that you're like, fuck, why did I do that?
Nah, there's none. I mean, there was a time where I felt alienated with the Air New Zealand video, but to be honest, nah.
Hey, how do you mean?
The Air New Zealand video, when it first came out,
yeah.
It's funny because Shook was actually a flight attendant, so she had to watch that video over and over again. And when we finally caught up, she was like, yeah, so you know how... I fucking hate that video. Like the safety video.
I forgot all about that. I'm going to have to re-watch it. So you rap in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you write the rap or...?
I wrote... Yeah, we all wrote a version of it, yeah.
What is it? Can you remember the lyrics?
Oh, no. Even if I don't, I'm not fucking doing it.
What, were you rapping like a safety thing? Like the
oxygen? Yeah, put your belt on and stow your...
So is that all you're getting?
So your bags on the high. I can't even remember the rules.
Yeah. Why do you regret that?
Oh, it's not that I regret. It was just that during that time, it was considered one of the worst. Like it got pulled down the fastest that any other Air New Zealand video had been taken down.
Oh, because it was like unpopular or annoying.
It was like 7 minutes long. Oh, okay. I think it was like ultra long.
Right.
There was a lot of things about it people didn't enjoy, so it came down quick. But yeah, so there was a moment we're going to Homegrown in Wellington, and all of the artists are on the plane, and they all kind of turn around and look at me, and they're like, "You fucking dick!" And I was like, "Oh no!" So,
were they looking at you like you fucking dick, or there's probably a little bit of envy there?
A lot of them were like, "Good on you for getting the bag. Good on you for getting your work done." But a lot of them are looking at you like you're fucking it. So,
you can't tell me that. Anyone else given the same opportunity would turn it down.
Oh, maybe they would. I don't know. Again, I didn't have management, so I was doing that deal by myself, bro. Mm. Just like a hoary dude pulling up in this meeting with all these executive people, and I'm like, I want this amount of money. And they were like, oh, should we talk to your team? I'm like, I am the team. Like, you know, so for me, it was in that way, it was like the coolest thing I've ever done. That's why I can't really, I don't regret that I did it.
What? Is it still on YouTube?
No. From what I hear, it's totally...
You have to watch it.
All right, thanks so much.
The lights are still on, so you have to remain seated. Right, so your relationship, so were you a fan of his music prior to meeting? How did you guys meet?
You didn't really know my...
And you don't worry about it because it was everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like an R&B girl.
Mm.
Yeah.
So
she really just like knew you for Don't Worry About It and the safety video.
Yeah, horrible.
I didn't even know it was you on the safety video.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh. You just knew that you hated it and then you found out.
I didn't watch it, I just had to listen.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
How did you guys meet?
Yes, it was during the COVID pandemic. I'd seen her on Flavor, the radio station. Tickled my fancy, I guess.
Were you a presenter on Flavour?
It was like a Sunday show.
Right.
Culture.
Separate to Flavour, but they let us use their studio.
Right.
So we're doing that for
a little
bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah. When you came into interviews with The Edge, you never cracked on to me.
No. It's the look. The look wasn't there for me, though.
Oh, that's cool. So what's next? So you got this new album out. Yes, Dad, Son, your fifth album. How can you say it's your last rap album?
When I say I mean last rap project, as in that took 2 years to write, and it was really deep, and there's probably, I want to say, 40 songs on the cutting room floor that didn't make the album. So just to give you perspective of how long I wrote it, and it was taxing, bro. It was like really taxing to go back to my childhood and like remember like all this pain and try to write from it. And on top of that, I have a newfound relationship with God quite recently, and I want to be able to bring light and positivity to my music, as opposed to, not that it's negative, just like I felt like I was in a negative space writing it. So the music from now on, not that rap is negative either, I shouldn't say that. It's just the art form of that for me was hard to navigate.
Mm.
So the music that I'm doing now is just stuff that makes you can put it on and listen to it with your family, and like, you just feel good. It's just feel good music. And put a bit of light in the world that is currently a very dark place.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if you can make someone's journey a bit easier,
yeah,
why the fuck not?
For sure.
And what was the journey with God? How did that come about? Were you raised religious?
No.
No,
I've always believed in a higher purpose, whether it be, I used to call it the universe. But quite recently, yeah, I needed something to help make sense of everything. Yeah. Again, so in terms of mental health, I've never been, that's actually been fine for me, but it was just something. My daughter's at an age now where she can look after herself. She's, you know, talking to me normally. She's not a baby anymore. She's grown. And so I'm like, what's my purpose now? I've raised this beautiful young girl and she's cool and we're financially in a cool place. What's next? And so the relationship with God is really something to keep my head firmly on my shoulders, instead of like, oh, now I want to go do something else. Or now I want to do something else. Just stay focused and stay being a great father, be a great partner, be a great man.
Yeah, but how does that start as an adult? Like, I can understand if you get into a relationship and your partner's religious and you're like, oh, I might tag along and see this, or you got some friends.
Yeah.
But do you Google, you know, what is the church for me? Or,
I see what you say. How did it actually come to
my life? Yeah, you feel like I need something else in my life. But then, like,
No. So it was the relationship needed strengthening. That's a better way to put it. Yeah, I knew. I've always believed in a God, yes. Like I said, and it was just to strengthen that bond with something that I believe is important. The way I can relate it to my life is that I have someone that loves me, or something that loves me regardless of what I do, which is a special thing to have, you know, to know that you feel loved no matter what you do. If you fuck up, you can say, hey, sorry, and you're forgiven, you know, and that's just a nice feeling to have. It's a nice feeling to have someone there always. Yeah,
thanks so much for sharing.
No worries. You're the first person to hear that, bro.
What about you? Do you love yourself?
Yeah. Probably too much. Yeah. Probably too much. Nah, bro, it's instilled in me now, but I can't say I struggled with that, yeah. But yeah, bro, I love myself. You can't love somebody properly until you love yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe that.
Mate, this has been a hell of a chat.
Fuck yeah.
It's quite cool. And this is one thing I'm loving about doing this podcast. It's like, I don't know how many times we've interviewed before, like maybe 10 times.
Never this deep.
No. And each time it's like we talked about some sexual relationships being transactional. Like, I feel like a radio interview is sort of transactional. It's like a 5-minute chat.
Yeah.
We ask you some goofy questions. You give us short answers. Yeah. But you don't get to, like, scratch beneath the surface.
And nah. It's and been, you know, cool, bro. There's one thing I remember with you at the Edge is you were always very nice to me, bro. You're always really nice to me. And I even remember when you left radio and we'd caught up kind of out just socially, and you always had the time of day for me, so I appreciate that, bro.
Yeah. Oh, likewise. I mean, when I read that article about you earlier this year and you talked about living with more integrity, it was a bit of a head scratcher for me, because I thought, the kingdom that I've got to know, which is only very briefly over the years, it was always like a stand-up guy. Thanks. Very obliging. That's why I asked if you had a problem saying no to things. We'd ask you to come in and judge some stupid fucking parody song contest or whatever, and you'd come in.
Oh, yeah.
It was always really good of you.
Well, bro, I love that stuff. Like, that was one thing that never fit me with the rap thing. Like, there's an element of really coolness to hip-hop. And I'm a dad first. So, like, I'm going to be a clown to my daughter on the swing, and, like, I'm going to be the goofy dude first. So hip hop was always secondary to that. So when I'd do a Jono and Ben skit or something, I did used to feel like hip hop would be like, that's corny, bro. And I'd be like, bro, my daughter means more to me than all you motherfuckers. Mm. And that was what the vibe was.
Yeah. I love that. Jeez, your mum must be really proud of the son she's raised.
I hope so.
Yeah. Has she said?
I don't think, yeah, I think she said, but I also, she's a woman who, I don't think she needs to say it. It comes out in just her, you know what I mean?
Yeah, actions rather than
words. Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and by saying that, I'm meaning nothing about the music at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely nothing about the music or the success or any of the trappings that have come as a result of that. I'm just of the boy that she's raised.
Yeah, I hope so, man.
Yeah, that's cool. Hey, thank you so much for coming around and being on the podcast, man.
Epic, man. Thanks for having me.
On the Dom Harvey podcast. Thanks for listening all the way through. I'm hoping that means you enjoyed the conversation. And if you did, please rate the podcast 5 stars on your app and subscribe to the podcast as well to ensure you never miss a future episode. I came across some stats online that something like 80% of listeners don't subscribe, they just listen. Also, another option available is to watch the episodes on YouTube. Just search the Dom Harvey podcast to find them. Just before we go, big shout out to the legendary brands making the growth of this podcast possible. They are the Generate KiwiSaver Scheme and Radix Nutrition. Radix have just released their version 9 meal range. These freeze-dried, just-add-water meals stack up nutritionally and they taste amazing. You won't believe the vast range of flavours either. If you're really busy or just can't be asked cooking but still want to eat well, you got to try these out. RadixNutrition.co.nz. Radix is spelled R-A-D-I-X. This episode is also brought to you by the Generate KiwiSaver Scheme. Generate is an award-winning KiwiSaver provider with a track record of chart-topping long-term performance. If you want to make sure you're making the most of your KiwiSaver account, talk to an advisor now. Head to generatekiwisaver.co.nz/get advice. A copy of their product disclosure statement can be found there too. The issuer of the scheme is Generate Investment Management Limited. And of course, past performance does not guarantee future returns. Thanks very much, Generate. And thanks very much, Radix. And especially, thank you for listening to the Dom Harvey podcast. Hope to see you next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.